running in his house.
Here we go, baby.
Come on.
Sixty-eight.
Naomi won, like, yeah. Grand Poobah.
Pretty much, yeah.
Muda scale, grand six, grand, grand Muda scale, 68. I missed you, man.
You canceled last week.
I did cancel last week,
and then
I didn't come through yesterday. I was just at the school where we're getting ready for this new the Smarter Balance test, and so I had to sit through like six after six. Boring hours.
Was it like The Natural, where they have that speaker?
Losing is a disease.
Yeah, that test scores is a disease.
Pretty much, man. It was brutal, man.
I must compliment. I don't compliment you often, but I must compliment you on that, dude. Because I had a recall with that, but man, you knew exactly what to say. how many times have you seen that movie?
That's not a lot, but I haven't seen it in 20 years.
No, I know. It's that.
But
it's
at
that
the time, I watched it a lot.
Good movie. Sad Boy Special.
Sad Boy Special.
So we are on the final countdown, if you will, to WrestleMania.
Is there an Asia poster around here somewhere?
There's no Asia poster, but
like in, you had that Asia poster framed. How hard did the people at the framing store laugh at you?
I never had an Asia poster in a frame.
40-year-old virgin, man.
See. I can't pull that out, dude. You can pull that out, and I can't. That's what you're good at. So we have Better Have My Donuts over here on Bad News Ramen. We're at Moodle Scale number 68, leading to WrestleMania. There's a couple things I want to talk about, and I kind of want to get your take on it, because I was kind of thinking about it today. Is there anything you want to talk about first, or you just want to jump on in?
Nah, go ahead, man.
So here's a question that I have. It's probably a two-pronged question, but the first question I have for you, without me divulging into what I believe and all this stuff, and thinking like, so what do you think? I'm trying to be professional over here.
So don't ask you what you think. Just answer.
Just answer it, yeah. So you telling me how to interview now?
That was okay. A question.
I was a pretty good interviewer way back when. WWE, are they using John Cena right?
What do you think? Are they using him right? I think they're using him the only way they know how to. I was actually thinking about Cena over the last couple of days, too. And, I mean, I don't know. I think they've really gone back to the old, like, 80s-style hero with John Cena. And it's this whole, like, he overcomes all this stuff that, like, he has no business overcoming. And, like, gives these really, like, corny, like, inspirational type, like, promos.
So let me preface this then.
Okay.
Before we start, because this might go down the same path as what we talked about with John Cena. The way he's been used over the past 3-4 months, where he's fighting, he wins most of the time, of course. But there's a couple times where the matches are interesting because they're putting him with the right people that can actually perform. And I think Cena's strongest point is that when you put him with someone else that can perform, I think the best comes out of him. The reason why I'm asking this is because I really have a feeling, we just touched on this last movie skill 2 weeks ago. You predicted that Cena was going to lose against Bray Wyatt. And I'm kind of having a feeling that he will lose at WrestleMania against Bray Wyatt.
Yeah.
So that's the question that I have. Are they using him right now?
Wow.
With everything that could happen at WrestleMania? And so before you answer that question, are you going to be upset if Cena beats Bray Wyatt, or has all the lead-in work before that between him and the Wyatt family, has that kind of paid off in its own sense where you won't get mad if he beats Bray Wyatt?
No, because I will be upset if he beats Bray Wyatt, because he hasn't really gone in. He hasn't put Bray Wyatt over to this point. And kind of what I'm saying, like, you know, I'll go backwards a little bit, and I do think the matches that he's been in have been solid. So I don't really have any problem with him in the ring over the last, like, 4 months or so. Since he's come back from his supposed elbow injury or whatever. Like, I think...
Well, it wasn't supposed. I mean, he actually was injured.
Yeah, but yeah. It's just, you know, he's got 50,000 injuries, and one maybe was legit. But, yeah, so ever since he's come back, I've been fine with the work he's put in the ring. I thought he's done his best work, like, performance-wise. So I'm not gonna take any pot shots at him there. I just think, like, the promo style that he's had and the character build that he's been using has been corny, man. This is all like, I'm scared, but you know, I'm gonna overcome my fear, and like turning this into some kind of like motivational speech. It's like 80s wrestling stuff. I think most, you know, most of the fans like us, like, you know, there's still the kids that are gonna eat that stuff up. But most of the sophisticated fans aren't too interested in, like, oh, you know, I'm scared, and it's the most scared I've ever been in my life, but I have to overcome my fear. You get that shit out of here, man. I mean, the matches are fine. Like, I want to see the match. But I would be disappointed if Bray didn't win, because, like, you haven't seen any kind of build to where Bray's been beating him down. I mean, in some triple teams here and there. But, like, for the most part, Cena's got over on Harper in their individual matches, and fine. But, like, then if he turns around and wins the match against Bray Wyatt at Mania, then it's going to seem like it all went for nothing. So, like, I still hold the, like, I still believe that that Wyatt's going to win the match, so I'm fine with everything. But so, I'd be disappointed if Cena won it.
So to show my further expertise as a journalist and listen to your answer and not kind of nodding off like I usually do, I'm sorry. I just had, you know, I have to do that sometimes. Not nodding off, but, you know, just to put a dig into you. Does John Cena need to lose this match to get any type of legitimacy ever in your eyes? I mean, is there ever going to be a point where you're going to be fine with what John Cena is doing, because it's been 10 years in with this guy? Are you ever going to be a point where you're actually going to start turning around and respecting this guy? Because that's slowly what I'm starting to do. Like, I'm respecting the work that he does in the ring. I've enjoyed his interaction with the Wyatt family. Does he need to lose this match?
He does need to lose the match, but that's not going to make me all of a sudden respect him, like, 100%. I mean, this is probably the highest level of respect I've had for him in his career. And that's mostly, like you said, based on the work that he's been doing. Like, I think he's been putting on solid matches. But as a character, I still think he sucks.
So we also touched about, when we talked about Bray Wyatt, why we like him, and you said the same thing. Well, we said the same thing about Bray Wyatt, is that he has a lot of 80 elements to him. He has a lot of kayfabe elements to his character, and it works for him. Is there a place for 80s kayfabe in modern-day wrestling?
Sure there is, but it's got to be done right. Like, it's not, you can't go back to everything that worked in the 80s. But I think, and I wouldn't really, I don't think Wyatt, I would categorize him as like a 80s kayfabe guy, like, thinking on it. I think it's more of,
would you compare him to, like, an Undertaker in the 90s?
No, what I would compare him to is, I think he's got a few elements of CM Punk, but I think I'd say it's like 25% Punk, and I think...
What's that 25%?
Just the idea to speak out, like, whatever he's thinking. But I'd say the 75% would be more Raven. I think he's got a lot of elements, and I was not some big Raven mark, but I think, like, this whole, like, creepy element with the kind of, like, rolling with a bunch of weirdos and kind of speaking in riddles, I think a lot of that is built off of what Raven did in you know, I never saw, like, a whole lot of what he did in ECW, but definitely, like, the character that he had in WCW. I see a lot of that in Bray Wyatt, but a little bit more a little more grounded in realism is where I kind of throw a little bit of punk in there. But I think he's like a moderned up, more believable, better version of Raven.
See, I kind of I respect what you said, but I kind of see him, you know, just kind of just listening to you talk and just kind of thinking off the cuff, I kind of see him more of as a more legitimate type of Undertaker, where Undertaker was kind of like the last pure kayfabe guy, and people bought into that stuff, and then Undertaker had to change as the business changed. I see him more of kind of the whole, more, it's more based off mystique than anything else. What makes Bray different is that he has chops on the mic, and is probably one of the best guys on the stick around right now.
Right.
I guess, you know, we started off this podcast, what, 2.5 years ago, 3 years ago, maybe 2.5, just talking about the John Cena problem. And I have slowly, I mean, I'm not going to say that I sit there and listen with bated breath to what Cena has to say during his promos. I'll still admit that I kind of fast forward his promos because I already know what he's going to say. But at least now, I thought what they did when they put him in the mask, I thought that was pretty effective. I thought that was, it was a nice little twist. I'm not saying that I'm jumping up and down and going like, oh, John Cena's here. And then just on Raw with Cena wearing the mask and stuff, it had some nice kind of, I don't want to say realism to it, but it's just like a nice, something different. Is there anything, what does John Cena have to do for someone like you or for someone like me to finally not get behind him, but kind of start respecting like we do when Triple H, towards the tail end of his career, some saying that his career is never finished, but at the tail end of his career, when we started respecting this guy in the ring, saying like, this guy does the job, he does what's, I don't want to say what's best for business, but he does right by the business.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's about the point that we're at with Cena, to be honest, because we never wanted to hear Triple H get on the mic, and still the same thing with John Cena, but like, at the end of the day with Triple H, like, we respected what he did in the ring. And Cena's kind of rounding into that point now where I'm starting to respect what he does in the ring. So I think he is kind of going on that Triple H career arc, but the babyface side.
But you've never been 100% behind Triple H, though.
No.
Right? Okay.
No. But the thing that leads me to say, like, I still would have a higher regard for Triple H is I've seen Triple H go heel and face and do both really effectively. And as you go back to always saying, on that Ric Flair DVD when he was asking what's the reason why Ricky Steamboat wasn't the greatest of all time, and he said Ricky Steamboat couldn't go heel, and I'm pretty much going to say the same thing with John Cena. And I mean, some people would try to go back and say that he was a heel when he first came in, when he's doing his battle rap gimmick, and maybe so, but like,
nobody cared,
and that was 12 years ago, and now he's played the same stale character for 10 years. So, if he could show that he could go and do another character, I don't even care. I really don't care if it's a heel, even. I mean, if it's another version of him as a face, it's fine. But I just can't. I can't get behind someone that just panders to kids and women. Like, not to be all Damon Bruce and be misogynistic over here, but like, he needs to come with some type of character that has some kind of edge that can make me as an adult male fan that's been watching this show for 20, 30 some odd years, make me actually think, yeah, now this guy's not, is something more than just some little bitch.
So this leads to two other questions, and the Damon Bruce quip you just put in, that's in all glowing adoration. I don't want to make it sound like, I don't want Damon to get on Twitter and start browbeating you because you're one of his biggest fans, and me as well.
Sarcasm if you're listening, D. Bruce.
Yeah. Well, the whole problem with D. Bruce, with the whole, you know, the problem is when you have a bunch of hacks listening to someone that's actually good, that's not afraid to put himself out there, and just point to like two couple things. Like with him, they talk about his women rant that he went on, that they have no place in sports, and then the Twitter pictures he took of the Giants' wives and wet T-shirts and stuff during the when they won the World Series and stuff. What they kind of forget this whole thing is that when Penn State happened, to me, as a journalist, he did one of the best jobs as a journalist. I think the two guys that really put it out there and they had the form to do it was Jim Rome and Damon Bruce. Mm-hmm. And to tell you the truth, I thought Damon Bruce did a way better job than Jim Rome did. And that's, I'm not saying like by far.
It's not a slight to Rome.
Not at all, because Rome is, to me, is one of the best interview journalists going today across all boards. So when you look at kind of John Cena, and this is kind of where, you know, because we want to compare. You smell a rat over there? You okay? Good?
Glasnost.
So this kind of leads into a couple other things, a couple questions I have, is that you bring up Steamboat, you bring up Ric Flair, and you can bring up a CM Punk, you can bring up a ton of other guys that, you know, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels. These guys are going down as the best of all time. And they're the measuring stick in terms of, like, as a pure wrestler, these guys are the best because they have, not only were they good on the mic, not only were they good in storytelling or the jobs they did for people, they're, you know, and then you add to their ring work at the same time. That's a different category. I mean, with John Cena, he's passable in the ring. I don't want to put The Rock in there because The Rock was so good on the mic, but The Rock doesn't have a lot of respect from a lot of people, wrongfully so, as being like one of the best of all time because they felt that his ring work wasn't as good, which is really garbage if you think about it. Yeah. I mean, this guy brought out the best in Triple H. Bruce Pritchard talking to Stone Cold on his podcast and saying, like, you know, Stone Cold and The Rock were magic together. And Stone Cold and Triple H, their feud for the Intercontinental Championship, you know, when you talk about mic work, you talk about ring work, it's some of the best of all time. And I'm hearing Bruce Pritchard say this. So I was like, you know, it's like, it's about time someone has enough knowledge and the wherewithal and remembering how good that was, because that was great. I don't think you were watching it back then, but I remember when I was watching it and just going, like, you know, these guys, this is the main event here. And then you'd have the main event with Stone Cold and Bret Hart and all that stuff and everything. But what you have with John Cena is you have more, they're more kind of the case of, he fits in the role of Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior for maybe a New York minute, and maybe a little bit of The Undertaker, even though Undertaker never had like an extended run as like the champion. He's been maybe a couple times. Where does John Cena rank when you put him in that classification of say the Hulk Hogans and everything else? Because I don't think he'll ever get the respect from me or you or from the IWC on being like the best of all time. He can't be the best of all time because he doesn't do this stuff. But in terms of being like the guy that WWE or WWF way back when hangs their hat on, and the reason why I'm kind of remembering Hulk Hogan is that Hulk Hogan, kind of being the host of WrestleMania, has brought up a lot of old stories about Hulk Hogan that people kind of forget. And even like, not all the good stuff, some of the bad stuff that he used to do too. And I read today on Grantland, the masked man talking about the shoot between a TV host and Hulk Hogan, where Hulk Hogan puts him in a front chin lock, and the guy like passes out within like 5 seconds. And it was because the guy was trying to poke fun at like saying like, well, this isn't real, Mr. T was on. And so Hulk Hogan and Mr. T kind of, you know, try to prove a point. And have you seen that clip?
No.
So basically he puts him in a front chin lock. The guy, so you remember in the movie Night Shift, right? You've seen Night Shift before? With Henry Winkler and
no,
Batman?
No.
You never seen it with Shelley Long? Like one of the best scenes ever of Shelley? Okay. I just lost my train of thought with Shelley Long in underwear. But anyways,
that must have been a long time ago.
It was a long time ago when she had some meat on her. But so basically, he was a guy, he played like a pimp in that movie.
Winkler?
No, not Winkler. Yeah, Winkler did too. But the we're going off on tangents here. So the guy was a comedian, and then he had a talk show, late night talk show for maybe 5-6 months or whatever it was. So Hogan puts him in a front chin lock, and the guy passes out like four seconds in. Like he passes out like that. He doesn't even have a chance to tap. He doesn't even know how to tap. Because back then, it's like, nobody tapped.
Right.
You know, you'd say uncle or something like that.
Well,
if you have, if you have someone in front of chin lock, they can't say uncle, right? This dates us because, you know, I remember saying uncle or whatever it is. So Hulk Hogan lets go of the guy, not really that the guy's passed out. And the guy literally just, like, drops to the floor, smacks his head up against the concrete floor. When Hogan wakes him up, there's a pool of blood underneath his head. And there's all these blood splatters all back there and stuff. So, and it's kind of like, you know, the thing about Hulk Hogan is that I don't think Hulk Hogan lies so much about everything that you can't take him serious anything that he says. And he was saying with the Ultimate Warrior DVD, not the one that came out now that's all glowing about him, where they actually talked to him. And I don't know why anybody wouldn't want to buy a DVD of Ultimate Warrior talking. But it was the one that they made fun of the Ultimate Warrior. And Hogan said, like, Ultimate Warrior backed out of a main event on a pay-per-view because he wanted to get paid more. And Hogan's like, told Vince, he's like, well, I can take a couple boys and we can finish it real fast. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of shows a different kind of light of Hulk Hogan, where he kind of protected the business. And I'm going like, well, how much is that real, or how much is that Hogan blowing shit up your ass? Well, when you show this clip and he literally chokes out a guy on live TV or whatever it is, he was protecting the business back then when it needed to be protected. So I guess the thing is, what I'm, after that long-winded diatribe I just went on, how is John... I mean, you respect Hogan. You don't respect Hogan, or at least talking for me, I don't respect Hogan for the ring work that he did, but I do respect him for the money that he's earned and the money that he drew. And there was a time when Hogan didn't have the belt, and when he won the belt, I was happy. Where do you put John Cena in terms of Hogan, in terms of these flag bearers of the WWE? They've only had probably about 3 or 4 of them. Where do you put this guy?
I mean, that's a hard question to answer, since there's only been a handful of guys that you could really say that there was like an era of dominance. If you're asking me to rank guys in terms of, like, you know, where they stand all time, I mean, I don't think Cena sniffs the top 10. And
that's what I'm asking. So okay. I've already established that. Yeah, so he's not going to be one of those guys.
So we're just talking about like the handful of guys that have led the company?
Yeah.
I'd say he's the worst. I think he's really been kind of led down the Hogan path, right? And especially, you know, you talking about Hogan. And yeah, he's a better Hogan in the ring. Of all the guys that they've put in that position that Hogan was in, to be the face of the company and weren't really that great in the ring, he's probably the best performer in the ring.
Now, before you say anything else, I guess we could probably put Stone Cold in that as well. And you could probably put The Rock in for me about 3-4 years when Stone Cold left. So maybe you have Hogan, maybe for a small part The Undertaker, Stone Cold and The Rock, and maybe probably even Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart.
Okay, well, John Cena's at the end of that list. Maybe if I'm trying to just be like impartial on this, I might be able to put him ahead of The Undertaker. Just that I think he's probably put on better matches than The Undertaker. And Undertaker to me was never any great shakes on the mic either. Not that he couldn't. I really like the American Badass gimmick. I thought when he played that role, I thought that was the best character he had. I thought that was probably the truest to who he actually is. But it was a really short-lived character. I never bought into the whole Undertaker, like, kind of like, you know, guy that comes back from the dead gimmick. I always thought that was kind of corny. So they're probably pretty close there. But I think he's a little, you know, he's more athletic than The Undertaker. Maybe a little bit better in the ring. But, I mean, he can't hold a candle to Bret Hart. He can't hold a candle to The Rock. Stone Cold. And while he's better in the ring than Hogan, he doesn't even approach him on the mic.
I just lost my question. Is there anything you like about John Cena? Will you ever like John Cena? What does he need to do for you to start respecting him?
I think I just said it. I will never like this version of John Cena, because I think he's just a super corny character that's aimed to get kids to watch wrestling. If he could ever figure out how to cut a promo that was directed towards adults and had some kind of impact, without some like really cheesy like kid type joke or whatever, and he flashes it every once in a while. Like every once in a while, on the way to a build to a big match, he'll come in and have like some kind of promo where he has like a little bit of an angry streak to him, and I think it's effective. But on the overall, it's just cheese, man.
Is the WWE better now because they have tapped children and women as fans. Is WWE better now for that? And does John Cena have a part in that?
Better in what way? Economically or as a show?
Just as a show.
No.
You don't like any. So here's. I think that's the easy thing to say, but I think if, like me looking at it closer, I think the company is better. Not so much for children, because I think kids are always going to watch, whether you have a John Cena character or not. But I really think what the WWE has done in terms of strides of corralling the female fan, I think it's made it better. And the reason why I say it is because maybe John Cena brought them in. And I don't even know if he did or not. I can't even quantify that. But maybe he brought them in. But it seems to me that women for the most part aren't stupid. You know, they're not dumb. They'll start gravitating to the people that they like. And it may be like a physical attraction in the beginning, but then they start like actually watching the matches and really seeing what these guys can do. I mean, I think you don't have the overwhelming popularity of, say, The Shield or the overwhelming popularity of Dolph Ziggler if you didn't have the women fans to kind of back those guys up. And the reason why I say this is because, like, on Twitter, it's rampant. I mean, just the amount of women that like The Shield, like Dolph Ziggler, have come in and started liking Daniel Bryan. I think that's really changed the way wrestling is, and I think it's made it at least more popular in that respect, because that was a group they were never hitting. Now it's like, when we talked about this before, when we were growing up watching wrestling, it was something we'd have to talk about in a corner. You know, like, if there was a good-looking girl, like, we're, you know, and you would, like, start talking about it, I was like, dude, shut up. You know, shut up. I'd rather talk about, you know, talk with this girl or whatever it is. Now it's like, you can do that and talk wrestling, and you don't have to hide it anymore. And does John Cena have a small part in that?
I say no. And the reason why I say that is going to be, okay, like, you know, I work in a different industry than you. But girls, you know, I teach middle school, okay? So girls these days are a lot different than girls of our age. There's no stigma against them liking things that guys liked. I mean, look at your own daughters. I mean, they play video games pretty much whenever they get a chance to. You know, there was a stigma against video games and girls when we were a kid that doesn't exist anymore. Comic books, like, you know, there's plenty of segment of girls that like all these things that you know, in our generation, you know, girls were, you know, looked down upon if they liked. So I don't think it's anything that John Cena's done. I think that there's just, girls have more, I don't know, they're into more things that guys like. There's more girls that are into things that guys traditionally like. And I think he happens to fall into that. The other thing I'd say is, I mean, if you look at, like, the typical woman on Twitter or whatever that likes Dean Ambrose, and there's plenty of them, they would want nothing to do.
More than plenty.
Yeah, but there is no way that they care about John Cena. Like, that's like the opposite. Like, it may even be that they gravitate towards Dean Ambrose because he's the polar opposite of John Cena. And if that's the point you're making, then maybe, you know, you got something to stand on there. But I just think that it's a generational thing, and more women are I guess, liberated to like sport or wrestling or video games or things that have traditionally been male dominated. And I think some of them end up liking Cena because they think he's eye candy. And a lot of them like these other guys. I think, you know, I think that if Dolph Ziggler got anywhere near the sustained push that John Cena got, I think he'd have like a way bigger female following. And I think he could capitalize on that. But I mean, I'm not going to give you too much. I'm not going to go 100% with your take that, you know, women are smart.
You're not going on my take that women are smart?
No. I like how you cut me off there.
All right, so
we'll
see you next week. Yeah, off the scale.
So no, I'm not, I mean, women are still susceptible to that guy's hot. I'm gonna fall in. So,
just as we are with AJ Lee.
I'm not denying that at all. I'm just saying that they will find a guy that they like and they think is good looking and they're going to support him, whether they actually know if that guy actually can perform in the ring or not. So I'm not going to give too much credit there that women are the more intelligent gender and they're following John Cena because you know, they think he has a really nice arm drag.
Okay, so what? And let me finish both sides of this question. If I don't lose my train of thought again, Jesus Christ, Dean. I'm struggling. I've been sick the past couple days, so I'm kind of loopy right now. So what credit are you going to give John Cena? And say in 20 years from now, when someone asks you about John Cena, what are you going to say about the guy?
I'd say...
So credit first. What credit can you give John Cena, if anything? And then in 20 years, what's going to be the kind of like this guy's like epitaph, so to speak, career-wise?
Credit would be that coming out of the 80s and 90s, there was a bunch of these guys that were considered like the faces of the company, that the company leaned on because they had a look and they could talk, but a lot of them really couldn't go in the ring. And he was a guy that actually had a decent ability to go in the ring. He just wasn't very good on the mic. And all these guys got pushed down your throat. Like Hulk Hogan got pushed down people's throat, right? Hulk Hogan was able to make it last because he could talk. Cena can't talk like
him. And because he turned heel.
Yeah.
With the NWO. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah. Cena couldn't talk anywhere near any of those guys. But at the end of his run, he actually ended up putting in some decent ring work. I think once he figured out, like, how stale he was getting, I think he realized that his character was never going to change. I think he knows that as far as the business goes, they make too much money off what he is now as a character. I think he knows that's not going to ever get him to change. So I think he realized he needs to do some better work in the ring in order to get a little bit of respect. And I'll give him the credit for that. 20 or 30 years down the road, I'll just say, I really don't know what I'll say. I'll just say, he wasn't very good. And if you know, I could probably, in his time, in his 10 to 15 year run, I'll probably be able to run down a list of at least 20 guys that I thought were much better than him all around.
And then, so within that, and there's another question I want to follow after this one. When you're looking back 20 years from now, can you name 5 matches that you remember that he did that you enjoyed?
I don't know. In 20 years, yeah, maybe, because I think right now I can name 2 or 3.
And what are those 2 or 3?
Him against CM.
I'll give you a hanging curve. I think the first one is going to be his match that he did the first WrestleMania. I think he was in or whatever it was, maybe a SummerSlam. I don't know where he FU'd Big Show. I mean, I think that was a kind of like a...
I think that was
a big moment in his career.
Sure, but I don't remember that as a match. I just remember that he actually... But it got cheapened because I saw him F5 the Big Show like 20 times, and every time the King act like he never saw it before. So no, I don't... I mean, I don't... That's not a match that I'm going to remember in terms of... Like, he's really strong, and he was able to pull off, like, his finisher, albeit his finisher sucks... But he was able to pull it off on every big guy that they had.
But we watched that match together. I mean, after that match, did you have like anything saying like this guy can be the next big thing? There was nothing that said. There was nothing that happened after that match where you'd be like, wow, this guy is primed for something.
No, when he was starting off his career, I thought, okay, this guy could have something going. But then he went through like an 8-year stretch of just absolutely being boring as hell.
Okay, so you're throwing out that one. So what were the matches you're talking about?
Him against Punk on Raw, him against Daniel Bryan at SummerSlam, and what I think is going to be a great match this Sunday at WrestleMania against Bray Wyatt. And those are the only 3 matches that stand out to me. I'll say that I can't remember anything specific, but I remember him and Edge putting on some really good matches. And this might be my bias, but I kind of remember Edge being the guy that made those matches really good. But the reason why they were interesting to me, and this is like a whole other facet of John Cena, is that those guys beat each other both ways. And that was like the first time after kind of Cena ascended to the top that I saw him in a program with somebody that I was never certain who was going to win or lose. Edge was kind of like his kryptonite. He was the one guy that could beat John Cena on any given night. And that's what made that feud interesting to me.
I'll throw one out there. I think Randy Orton, when Randy Orton was first time to turn face, they had a series of like three or four matches when The Rock first came back, and that's when I started watching wrestling again. I remember both those guys. It was a table match, and I thought that match was great. It was just a really good match, but it was just because he allowed Randy Orton to kick out. And Randy Orton's kind of funny because it's not like you're talking about a Cena match and an Orton match going like, well, Orton carried that match. I don't think Orton right now can carry any match. He's just not that type of wrestler yet. I mean, he has some certain aspects where he can do it, but I remember that match. It was two guys, two kind of hungry guys that they're facing each other. Cena, of course, was the guy that never lost and stuff and everything, and Orton was able to kind of have the same thing with Edge, where you didn't know who was going to win, and he won some. I think he won like two or three times, or maybe two times against Cena.
Yeah, a decent feud.
So you have that one. The last question I have, and if you want to finish this, we can finish this one.
We can't do the whole go home WrestleMania podcast on John Cena, man.
Oh, but I love the guy.
I know you do.
So I guess the glaring question is, and I think this question's already answered. I think you've kind of answered it, especially talking about Ricky Steamboat. Will John Cena ever become a heel?
I'd say no. I just don't think the way that the business goes today. I just think they would be too concerned that they would lose a whole lot of money by doing that. I mean, I think it's the best thing for his character, but I don't think they look at things like that. I think they, and again, I'll go back to the point that I've been saying for 2 years. I don't even know that John Cena could be a good heel, but I just don't think that WWE would risk the cash cow that they have with John Cena as a babyface right now. I don't think they see any upside in it, so I don't think he'll ever go heel.
So it's just kind of coming like a fine line of. I tried everything I could talking to you about this to try to find some silver lining with it, and it always comes back to the same thing, where he needs to be a heel, but he never will be. And you don't think he can? You don't think he'll be a good heel? If you were to talk to me 2 years ago, do I like John Cena? 100% of it would be no. Whatever this guy did, I could care. I didn't like it. I don't like him. Whatever it is, right now it's probably about 10%. 10%. That I like John Cena about 10%, 90% no. And that's kind of where we're at with this. The good news is that there's plenty of other people going on, other guys that are really blossoming and carrying the show, and that will kind of segue into if you don't want to talk about anything, because I want you to say some stuff too if you have any issues you want to bring across, but Shield turning face.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know what to think. I mean, I think it's great, but I don't know what to really say about it because I don't know how long it's going to last. Everything you would read online and just logic kind of dictates that they're just doing it to set up Roman Reigns turning face somewhere, either at Mania or right after.
Well, but they're face right now.
Right.
All three of them are face.
Right, I know. But so basically what I read was... if they were all heel and Roman Reigns turns against them, then it's kind of confusing who the face is. So they made them all face so that Rollins and Ambrose could turn against him and make it clear who the face is and who the heel is. And if that's the case, it's like, okay, I think their face run is really good. I think they could carry this for a year easy. And I would really like to see that. But it's hard for me to get invested in it because I don't think that's what's going
to
happen.
Because you don't want the Shield to break up.
No, I don't.
Yeah, I don't think anybody does.
But, I mean, we said this from the beginning. I mean, they could be a great face team or a great heel team. And honestly, I think they should try to stretch this thing out because there is no face team in WWE. And especially the way that they're building up the Wyatt family and the way they're building up potentially this authority team with, if they want to keep having Triple H wrestle and you have Batista and you have Randy Orton, if you want to go in some kind of evolution direction, I mean, I don't think anything would be better than to have a team like the Shield as kind of let them be the underdog face team for a year, right? I mean, I'm not saying I want to see them lose a lot, but I mean, if they go through a whole year where they just got to take it, and they go on and put great matches on, and the crowd's behind them, I mean, that'll work.
Triple H wrestling, again, like maybe he has another resurgence in his career. Are you okay with that?
Probably not. I mean, if he can come out of... No, I'm not. Because I've seen this guy wrestle, like, you know, once or twice a year for the last few years, and it's not good. Now I will give him... This is the benefit of the doubt I'll give him. Now he's going to step in the ring with Daniel Bryan, and somebody that can actually make him look good. Like, him and Brock, I had no interest in that match. Him and Taker, no interest. And most of the guys that he's come out of retirement to face in the last few years are your traditional, like...
Shock and awe.
Yeah.
And no substance.
Yeah, the word that popped in my mind quick are dinosaurs. And not saying that these guys have no value in the business anymore.
They don't. I'll say they don't. Well, I don't think Brock Lesnar does. I don't think Undertaker does.
Yeah, well, maybe that's the case. But dinosaurs and that... This is the kind of guy Triple H fought in his prime 10, 20 years ago. And that was what people wanted to see. But I don't think people want to see that match anymore. I think everybody's seen that match 100 times over. And now him stepping into the ring with Daniel Bryan is really good, because Daniel Bryan can make anybody look good. So in that case, maybe this is the right move for him. But then it's also kind of like this false sense that now, oh, Triple H is going to get in this match with Daniel Bryan, and Daniel Bryan's going to tear the house down, and then Triple H is going to walk backstage and say, "Did you see everybody out there cheer for me?" And now he's going to think that he should get in the match with anybody.
You said that wrong. It's like this. Did you see everybody go crazy for
me? I think you would finish it with the game.
I think sometimes, well, I don't think sometimes, I think you're hard on Triple H, because I don't think he liked the guy, but Triple H by himself is not that good. But when you put him in a guy, when you put him with a wrestler, he can go. Right? He can go with The Rock. He could go with Stone Cold. When you put him with guys, and that's true with anybody. I mean, you look at Bray Wyatt against Kane. That was a terrible match. It wasn't a good match. But then you put him in with Daniel Bryan. He's a wrestler. Daniel Bryan's a wrestler. And they both know how to go. I think Triple H is in the same category. Triple H is not one of these transcendent wrestlers, like say like a Ric Flair, say even a Hulk Hogan, that has one of the most boring matches ever. But during his prime, you'd sit there and watch it. I think Triple H can still go. If Triple H goes against guys that know how to wrestle. Now, if it's Triple H versus Randy Orton,
that's the point I'm making. Okay. Like, he's going to go, he's going to have this match with Daniel Bryan, and then out of that, he's going to think, like, oh, did you see how everybody popped for me? And then he's going to go in a program with Batista, and then he's going to go in a program with Randy Orton, and then he's going to go in a program with John Cena, and it's going to be boring as fuck, because none of those guys can make him look good.
You're right. 100%. Very good. Thank good you. Job. Okay, now the forum's on to you now.
Well,
and this is where you had a great 40 minutes. Now you're going to go in the tailspin.
No, well, I mean,
dare open the cockpit.
Hogan, get in the rocket ship. Hogan,
you're doing pretty good. You haven't nosedived yet, but so go ahead.
All right. Well, I mean, my big thing would have been the Shield. But I think we kind of covered that. So I'll go another direction. And, you know, we're here getting ready to watch WrestleMania. I'm very curious what's going to happen in the four-way tag team match. Like, if I just look at it logically, I'm thinking, okay, it's probably going to come down to the Usos and the Real Americans. And my first instinct, because I was kind of thinking about it today, was, well, this might be the time for Real Americans to win. But, like, I thought about it for a while, and I think this is probably where you're going to see the Cesaro face turn. I think the Usos will retain, and I'll think somehow Cesaro turns against Jack Swagger. So my question is, how big of a star do you think Cesaro can become as a face?
I think Cesaro can be as big of a star as Dolph Ziggler, as Damian Sandow, And are those guys stars? No, they're not. Even you can even take a look at Big E. I mean, they've pushed Big E off to the side. It's kind of like the whole thing when Scott Hall was going through all of his problems and Kevin Nash came out and said, the only person that can help Scott Hall is Scott Hall. Well, the only way Cesaro can be a huge star is if WWE wants it. And I don't think they're ready to do it. I think he is primed and ready to be, I would say, right in league with The Shield, right in league with Bray Wyatt. I just don't think they know what to do. They don't know what to do with it. I just don't think the WWE is not ready to help themselves. And if they latch on to Cesaro and let this guy go and everything that he can do in the ring, they're going to have a major star. But it's just he is not built for WWE star. He's not.
Because why?
He's not American born. I think that's really I think that's the biggest thing. He's not. You can't. It's the same reason why I can't answer that question. It's the same reason. It's the same reason why Dolph Ziggler's not a big star. I mean, Dolph Ziggler has all the makings to be the top guy in this company. CM Punk has all the makings to be the top guy in this company. Daniel Bryan has all the makings to be the top guy in this company. I think the main problem that you're going to have, and the problem that's always has been, we thought a long time ago that Triple H, when he took over a little bit more, you know, we gave him so much props for bringing in Bruno Sammartino, doing all the things that were right by the business at that time. To me, he is the main roadblock for any of these guys to take off. I'll put Triple H up there, and I'll also put John Cena up there as well, because it's just too much of an unknown from there. Too afraid to corporately to step away and give the guy the ball to do it. There's no TNA. There's no WCW to push the envelope to make them try new things. They can keep on doing the same things over and over again. I think Cesaro can be your top star. I think Cesaro is great on the mic. He is great in the ring. He has it. He has the it factor. But so is Dolph Ziggler. So is Damian Sandow. And where's Damian Sandow right now? He's losing to Scooby-Doo. You know, I mean, it's just like if they put Scooby-Doo in a match with Damian Sandow, Damian Sandow would get squashed. Like Saturday morning superstars, they are just not ready for these guys. Any guy that shows anything fresh that can organically build up a following of fans, they don't know what to do with these guys and they turn it off. Zack Ryder is another great example. Zack Ryder 2 years ago, Zack Ryder, I don't think he could have been the top star of the company, but he could be a major. He could have been a major player. But what do they do? Who do they give the mic time to? They give it to the Miz. You know, they're like, Miz, here, you take the ball and you run with it. I have no idea why whatever the Miz did in his life or in the WWE for them to look at him and say, hey, let's pair you up with Ric Flair. Let's have Ric Flair give you the rub as being the next time big thing. And then the sad thing is that the Miz didn't work. So that's just more another obstacle that these guys have to go through. It's like, well, if the Miz didn't work when we pushed him, how is Cesaro going to work? How is Dolph Ziggler going to work? How is Damian Sandow going to work? I mean, that's the thing and the sad thing is the reason why I asked you, like, is kayfabe, does that work in this WWE in this day and age? For a small part, it does, because Bray Wyatt is taken off. The Shield, not so much as Bray Wyatt, but they have a lot of old school. I mean, the Shield to me is they're the main guys in say a Southern territory, you know. Just but the difference is that these guys can actually go and work the WWE style and put on great flipping matches. Yeah,
they're not a bunch of fat hogs over there just ganging up on people.
They're not Stan Hansen passes prime or Bam Bam Terry Gordy passes prime.
Or Rugged Ronnie Garvin.
Rugged Ronnie Garvin or Jimmy Jam. Did we put Rugged Ronnie Garvin? Yeah, we did. In the Hall of Kayfabe. So my answer is I think he is primed and ready. I think out of if you're going to say Dolph Ziggler, Damian Sandow, Cesaro, and Bray Wyatt, who's the most primed to take off? Well, Bray Wyatt's already taken off, and there's nothing stopping this guy. You can put Big E in that list too. Big E was taken off. Big E was gaining a huge following, and then they just pushed him off to the side. He wasn't on TV anymore. Cesaro, out of those three guys, Sandow, Ziggler, and Sandow. Cesaro, Sandow, Ziggler. There we go. Out of those three guys, I like Cesaro the least. But out of those three guys, I think Cesaro is the one that is most primed to be a star in the WWE if they ever give him the chance. I just don't think they ever will.
And you think that's a Triple H thing, you think that's a Vince McMahon thing, or you think that's going back to where we started this podcast saying that they just can't have anybody that could potentially get bigger than John Cena?
I think it's all of the above.
All of the above?
Yeah. I think it's all of the above. I think it's just a case of, and the sad thing about Cesaro is that everything that they want in a superstar, Cesaro has. He's a tweener. But he's strong as hell. He's probably, you know, he pound for pound, he's probably the strongest guy on that roster.
I have no doubt that he's stronger than John Cena.
Yeah. So the only thing that's stopping him is that he's, two things to stop him. One, he's an indie guy. And we know the track record of indie guys in the WWE. Even though indie guys are running, pushing WWE in terms of Raw, they're the ones that, it's like, you know what it's like? It's like Benoit, Malenko, Saturn, and Guerrero in WCW. These guys were carrying the show. These guys carried the show. You could have all these other dumbass storylines, but as long as you saw these four guys wrestle and carry the show and do the meat of the show, everything was fine.
Yeah.
And this is the category that Cesaro's in. He's not. I mean, he's a foreign-born guy. That's his gimmick. And he's an indie guy. And I think that you can add that to the mix too. It's frustrating. And the reason why I'm not as angry as I usually am is because there's a slim glimmer of hope that I think Bray Wyatt will beat John Cena. And even if he doesn't beat John Cena, it's like, okay, but at least they're using this guy the right way. Well, if you're using Bray Wyatt the right way, well, then use Dolph the right way. Use Cesaro the right way. I want to see Cesaro in the main title picture. I don't think it's ever going to happen. And I think, you know, when we're 50 years old and 60 years old and you can barely understand what we're saying and we start talking about Social Security and stuff and we do a Hall of Kayfabe, these guys are going to be in it. And I think Cesaro was going to be the inaugural member of 20 years from now of the Hall of Kayfabe. When I have to take my teeth out and put them in and put the dentine on or whatever it's called or the poly grip, you know, it's going to be the poly grip Hall of Kayfabe and he's going to be my first inaugural member in that whole thing.
Because he's never going to get his run.
I don't think he ever will. I mean, I'll be very surprised if he does. I want to, you know, and maybe it's a case where maybe this is the whole New England Patriots thing, right? Like, I'm not going to believe until they actually win the Super Bowl, and then I can turn around and say, hey, man, I knew all along that the Patriots, you know, were going to do it. I'm not going to invest myself. I've invested in Sandow. I've invested in Dolph Ziggler, thanks to you. I've invested in Cesaro.
My fault.
That's your fault as well. I don't want to invest myself in these guys because I don't want to get let down.
All right. Well, there's one more guy that you shouldn't invest yourself in that I think is close to that category.
Fandango?
No. Wade Barrett, dude.
I love Wade Barrett.
I mean, you sound like you sound like JBL over there. I love Wade Barrett. But, like, I mean, there's another guy who he's got all the tools and... I mean, I don't think anybody's had more start and stop pushes than Wade Barrett. This Bad News Barrett character, in my eyes, is over as hell.
Even though he's never wrestled before.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing. The guy's over as hell just for getting on some stupid, like, some Jack gimmick. Yeah. And saying, decorum, please. I think he's over as shit. And what it's been, like, what, 4, 5, 6 months that he's just been doing that and they don't have him wrestle?
I'm going to give this to WWE. Right now, the road to WrestleMania hasn't been as laborious as it was last year. I mean, this year, the road to WrestleMania has been a very short road. We're in the carpool lane with this whole thing. It's gone by very fast, and it's not a case of like, okay, once WrestleMania is over, everything's going to reset and let's see what happens. Storyline and continuity rise. I thought they've been doing a very good job. There's a lot of questions out there, of course, about that. The main event will answer a lot of those questions. But you have like these guys. You have like Bray Wyatt being the top one, the Shield being right along with Bray Wyatt, where you know they're going to continue with their storyline and things are going to happen. I just think Cesaro's going to get lost in the shuffle. I think that Dolph Ziggler is going to be lost in the shuffle. And we can sit here and say, well, Cesaro has been the most over in-ring performer. He surpassed Daniel Bryan in the ring in terms of being over with the fans of what he does in the ring. Let me correct myself on that. For me, he's been a lot more enjoyable to watch than Daniel Bryan, because Daniel Bryan's becoming very, it's becoming very formulaic, which is sad in itself. And I think there's a lot of fans out there that will say the same thing, that Cesaro has been the best in-ring performer for the past 3-4 months than Daniel Bryan has. Because Daniel Bryan's kind of fallen off a little bit, and it's he's had the same storyline for 8 months or since SummerSlam or whatever it is. It's getting tired. Mm-hmm. So Cesaro, to me, the stuff that he does in the ring, yeah, he does have his airplane spot, but it's one move. It's not 50 or 4 or 5 moves that Daniel Bryan does. Because Daniel Bryan has the 5 moves of doom down pat. Cesaro has the one move. He has his crazy ass uppercut, which is great, and he flows in his matches.
Well, he can pull that uppercut off from like 4 or 5 different positions, and I think there also is a little bit to the fact that he's in a consistent tag team, and Swagger makes him look good too. Like they work really well together as a team. Yeah, but Cesaro, you know, he in the indies he was mostly a tag team wrestler anyway, so he does a really good job with that. But, yeah, no, I mean, I can't disagree
with that. Because if he breaks up with Swagger, then he's going to have 2 months of Swagger. You're going to have 2 months of Swagger and Coulter talking whatever it is, and then Swagger's going to ambush him, you know, out in the back. So you're going to have at least probably a month and a half.
Sure. But at least, see, the thing that kind of gives me a little bit of optimism is we know now going forward after WrestleMania that they'll start getting rid of some of the fluff guys that are just in there for the Mania run. So they'll go back to having more time for actual wrestling and stuff like that. So, you know, there's now going to be more time for him to actually get into a program. And if he goes in a program with Swagger, so be it. That's not the worst thing. Swagger can go in the ring. I got no problem watching Swagger matches.
If they take the emphasis off of the heavyweight belt, which they haven't done, but in terms of what we watch, that's the last thing we want to see. Because you have the Usos. The Usos are great working champions. You have the Shield that put on great matches. Bray Wyatt is having good squash matches. His match with R-Truth wasn't the best match in the world, but you watched it, and it was very fun to watch. If you take the emphasis off that belt, off the heavyweight belt, which it's going to have to be right now, because the only two ways that you can have emphasis back on that belt is if Bryan wins, then I'm fine. You know what? He's paid his dues.
Run that's not what you want. I thought you wanted to see Triple H walk.
I am telling you. Okay. I am telling you what two ways that this belt will be bigger than it is right now. So that's one way. I would be, as a fan, I'd be totally fine with Daniel Bryan winning and him getting his run. I'll see how that run turns out, but at least it'll be like the feel-good story, right? It's a feel-good story, so I can get with that. I can get on board with that. The other way is if Triple H wins the belt, and then you have Evolution back.
With Wade Barrett as the fourth member.
Okay, that's not going to happen. The Twitter today was one of the guys that I follow, he follows me. There should be a name for that. You know, like, he's my tweep, I guess. That'd be a tweep, right?
Yeah, sure.
Sure, let's call it a tweet. Jude Kilgore was, like, putting it out there. Oh, CM Punk is going to come back, like, kind of tongue-in-cheek and stuff and everything. Because Austin was kind of saying, two things came out with CM Punk, right? That he's engaged to AJ Lee. And did you know about that?
I saw there was a couple, like, close-up photos. They had a ring on her finger, and people were speculating. But I didn't see anything.
I think Bleacher Report confirmed that. I think Bleacher Report.
Oh, come on, man. Dude, after the first year and a half, you killed me every time I referenced Bleacher Report.
Will you let me finish? Can I finish?
Yes.
It is Bleacher Report, but they did confirm it, which doesn't mean anything, okay? But that's out there. And also, too, like Austin on his podcast saying that CM Punk is going to return at WrestleMania 30. So there's a little bit of speculation here and there. And it's just, you know, it's not – Austin doesn't have any inside knowledge of it. He's just saying, like, you know, he guarantees that CM Punk will be at WrestleMania 30 and be involved in some type of angle. So – what the hell were we talking about? So there's that. So it's not it's a case where this WrestleMania leading up to it has been a better build for WrestleMania this year, because there's a lot more storylines that can go on. where
with it's every, more sustainable.
Yeah, with every other WrestleMania, with The Rock coming back or whatever it was, it's like, okay, now it's time to hit the reset button, and now it's time for these young guys to, you know, because we're thinking back, the silver lining that we have is that, okay, these young guys like Ziggler, they're finally going to get their due. Bryan's finally going to get his due after WrestleMania. Now CM Punk is, you know, now we can focus on these guys again because we don't have the big marquee name. Where this is like, you already know Bray Wyatt is going to continue. The Shield's going to continue. They have stars in place where you don't have to hit the reset button and say, okay, give these guys a chance, because these guys are already getting the chance. Mm-hmm. And it's not like this gloom and doom, like, feeling that John Cena's going to have the belt again. Now we're going to be stuck with a month-to-month, you know, new opponent for John Cena for every pay-per-view. And why isn't CM Punk in that spot? Or why isn't Daniel Bryan in that spot? So it's a lot more sustainable. That's a good word. So I'm kind of looking forward to what's going on, and I'm going to watch Monday. Next Monday I'm going to watch, and I'm not going to watch for the crowd reaction. You know, because that's all we had before. It was like, well, how's the crowd going to react? The biggest day in wrestling is not WrestleMania; it's the day after, because that's when you get the feedback from fans. And the smart thing what WWE does is that they kind of know what's going to happen the day after, or how the fans are going to react, and then they play into that as well. So, to me, I really don't need to watch WrestleMania. I think this is one of the times where I don't really want to watch it. If I watch it, I do. Now I know that your kid has a, your snot nosed kid has a game.
He's a bona fide tough guy now.
He is a bona fide tough guy. Two red cards, more than I ever got. I don't even think I ever got a red card. I was always good. See, I got to talk to your kid because I always got yellow cards. I never got the red card. Because I always made someone else get the red card. I positioned people here and there.
We can't go into this in the show, but yeah. That referee was a joke.
Okay. So we're an hour in. Very fast hour.
That's because you spent 40 minutes talking about Cena.
We spent 36 minutes talking. Oh, you did most of the talking. So
I was answering your question.
I let you shine today. Was it a good segment?
Yeah, you're a good broadcast journalist.
Bobby Brain. Eat your heart out.
Who unfollowed you?
the foe, Bobby the Brain. Okay, so Holly Cake, I have a guy. Okay. So, and this comes off the heels of listening to two really good podcasts. And I've never been a fan of this guy, but after listening to the way this guy went on the Steve Austin show and really shined and just spoke straight off the cuff, and, you know, I don't want to say straight from the heart because it kind of sounds all touchy-feely. But this guy did have to do a touchy-feely for a little bit for something that happened to him. Two things that happened to him. Maybe three things that happened to him. Where one of you got to see him actually like be touchy-feely in a sexual way, which I don't think anybody ever wants to see again. The guy I want to induct is X-Pac.
He's not in?
X-Pac is not in.
All right.
And the reason why is
touchy-feely in terms of losing his anus. Is that what you're talking about?
Losing his anus. Okay. That was one of them. The other one was Hey Joni on The Surreal Life, back when The Surreal Life actually meant something. I don't know if it ever did, but for maybe 5 seconds it did. And then, of course, the Night in China, which thankfully I've never seen. But a lot of people have, and so we don't have to get into that. But
I mean, X-Pac did. Hey-o!
This, when we talk about guys like Jericho, guys like Edge, guys like Benoit, guys that have gone through territories, Japan, Mexico, did all this kind of the real type wrestling type work where they went through the grind and everything like that, X-Pac's the direct opposite of that. X-Pac did a little bit of indie stuff or a little bit of territory stuff in Florida. Was trained by Malenko, Boris Malenko, and he got success right away in WWE, and then once he was done with WWE, then he started doing, like, he did the MTV wrestling that lasted maybe about 2 months. He did a lot of Mexico work, overcame a lot of drug problems and stuff. Just straight off, listen to those two podcasts. If you want to know what wrestling is or what wrestling used to be and what wrestling is for guys that aren't in WWE, I think X-Pac is one of the flag bearers of that movement of just grinding day in and day out, and it's just a straight professional wrestler. Just a really good interview, and some of the stuff that I really enjoyed was Austin talked about his Mexico days and stuff, and he's like, "Well, tell me the psychology of Lucha Libre wrestling.
Or, I don't know.
I always say he's all there is none.
Yeah.
He's all there isn't any.
Right.
You know, he's like, there is none, Steve. And he's like, and let me tell you why. And so he just goes off and talks about that. Just really candid with a lot of stuff, you know, with the addictions that he had. He tried killing himself. That didn't work. And
throwing a cup of shit in the Sable's bag on her last
that
day.
That one too, yeah. So you did hear the podcast.
I know I heard at least one. There was 2 hours, right?
Yeah.
I know I heard at least the first hour. I can't remember if I heard the second. But no, it was a really good interview. Yeah. No, I kind of thought we had already inducted X-Pac. So that's a good call on your part. One of the better calls that you've made for Hall of Kayfabe, guys.
Oh, my Hall of Kayfabe's impeccable, the guys I put in. I put Rugged Ronnie Garvin.
Exactly.
A lot better than Paul Roma.
I would take Paul Roma over Ronnie Garvin any day of the week.
Okay. All bullshit aside.
Yeah.
X-Pac, what do you think?
X-Pac is funny now, like, thinking about X-Pac, because, you know, we talk about how, like, you know, you asked me earlier, like, what would it take for me to start liking John Cena and things like that. I did not care at all about the 1-2-3 kid. I thought it was a stupid gimmick all the way. But it just shows you what you do if you can take a guy that has some talent, and even though he might have a really cornball gimmick, you turn it into something that works. And X-Pac worked, and Six worked. And that's when I really started, like, X-Pac was, I was kind of cold on DX, right?
You made him a cruiserweight champion in your video game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's peaks praises. Go ahead.
Right. And like, you know, I was kind of whatever with that, with DX, right? But when he went to WCW and he was Six, and I got to see him work a little bit more with Hall and Nash and Hogan, then I really became a good fan. And then when he came back, I was into him. He came back and he was X-Pac again. But even like the run he had with Kane was pretty solid. I mean, they were a pretty good tag team. He was pretty good on the mic. Like, not so much for cutting a promo, but, like, guy was really creative with, like, catchphrases and stuff like that. And, like, really good entrance, which I know you like, and always great in the ring. And he's one of these guys that was really small, but was so athletic that, like, he could go with anybody in the ring and have a good match.
You know, I'm going to go a step further with X-Pac. You look at him with, he was part of the two biggest factions, two biggest over factions, and I'm not including the Four Horsemen, because Four Horsemen to me is the best faction ever. But during the Attitude Era, he's part of the two biggest factions, let's say that. Because the Four Horsemen during the Attitude Era, they buried those guys. With NWO and with DX. And with NWO, he was like the Tully Blanchard of NWO. He was the guy that nobody liked, but he gave him a ton of attitude. Just like, whether it was comic relief or just a guy that you just hated. I mean, because everybody liked Hall, everybody liked Nash, everybody liked Hogan. You hated X-Pac. You hated that guy. And that's X-Pac heat, you know, which spawned into Vicky Guerrero heat.
Yeah.
DX does not get its legitimacy. They do not become one of the top two factions in the Attitude Era with that X-Pac. When X-Pac came out, when Triple H did the infamous promo of Shawn Michaels, like, Shawn, is it all sewn up with Mike Tyson? Is it all sewn up? And, you know, he did that. He's like, well, I brought some of my old friends. And X-Pac comes out. And X-Pac, to me, cuts one of the most important promos of the Attitude Era. When he comes out, and the first thing he's like, I was sitting there with my mind on my money and my money on my mind. And, you know, and then he says, he calls out a Hogan. And he was just like, you know, Hogan, you say I can't cut the mustard in WCW. He's like, well, Hogan, you suck. And, you know, just the pop that he got. And he's like, if Hall and Nash could come back over here, they would. And he really was kind of the mouthpiece for all those three guys during that time, because both Hall and Nash have said that they didn't want to leave WWE. I mean, that was the major leagues. And, yeah, they brought up the Bush Leagues to, like, AAA status, and AAA status, but they always knew that they could do their best business. If they had that gimmick in WWF, they knew they could be that much more, make that much more money. Now, they made a lot of money in WCW, but it was just that kind of general feeling. It's like, the best businessman in wrestling is Vince. Vince is the guy that you want to work for, because he takes care of you the best.
Yeah.
And he brought attitude to both, you know, you talk about attitude era, he brought attitude to both of the two most important factions. I think he's one of the key linchpins in both of those. And if you don't have him across those two groups. I don't think he had the Attitude Era as we know it. And I think he's kind of the forgotten guy during this whole thing. I think he's one of the most... I'd probably say he's one of the top 10 most important people during that era. Even though he didn't get... And that's why he's in the Hall of Kayfabe. He didn't get the title runs and stuff. But in terms of what he did within the framework of the whole Attitude Era, he's one of, you know, they talk about Seth Rollins being the kind of the
architect,
you know, which is stupid unto itself, yeah. But he really framed that Attitude Era as well. Yeah. And it's not, both those factions aren't as popular or aren't as effective without that guy in there.
So I can't dispute any of that. So I think that's a good note to leave it on, but yeah, definitely. I'm surprised he's not in there already. So it's good that we got a Mr. Waltman in there. Minus his anus,
yeah. His partially torn anus, or whatever. Partially recovered, I don't know. Do they put the anus, like, can they build an anus in a test tube and reinsert it?
Well, they're doing wonders with cloning and genetics these days.
So, we don't have a match, right?
No, but I'll have a series of promos here.
Okay.
All right.
Wow, look at that.
Yeah.
Get out your crumpled piece of paper. Where's the producer? There you go. Good job.
So, easy. Why don't you get off the piano and rock this funky shit?
Woke up quick.
So,
at about noon. Go ahead.
So, there was a whole series of these I thought were really good, but one specific one, I know I was in attendance live in Oakland, California. She popped there. And I think you might have been with me. But went to watch, I think it was SmackDown in Oakland back in the 90s, early 2000s somewhere. And the timing was perfect. This is how long ago it was. The Raiders were actually a playoff team at the time. And I believe that the Raiders were getting ready to face the Baltimore Ravens. And one extremely entertaining tag team came out and was willing to provide, for the benefit of those with flash photography, a 5-second pose. And so Edge and Christian came out with full-on Raider gear, and the whole crowd's going nuts and, like, cheering them on, and they're talking about how the Raiders are getting ready to make their playoff run and this and that. And then they called their pose Any Given Sunday. And then right as Christian went down into his three-point stance, Edge removed his Raiders jersey to reveal that he had a Ravens shirt underneath. And then Christian went to charge him and bounced right off of him. And just immediately the whole crowd just completely turned on him, which I thought was funny because they're heels, and Raider fan is generally a heel fan, but now all of a sudden they hated the heels. But I just wanted to kind of give an ode to the 5-second pose. That one I was in attendance personally at, but thought the whole run of Edge and Christian 5-second poses all throughout was really good. I thought they were great at, like, starting off getting the crowd behind them with something funny, and then just completely turning on the home crowd and getting the hate immediately right after. So I don't know, that one just sticks out to me because I was there, but I liked all the 5-second poses.
You do not have Edge or Christian without that 5-second pose, and it's good that you bring this up, because we talked about this earlier in the podcast. You had two guys that were primed to take off, at least one guy that was primed to take off. Christian, of course, hasn't had the career that Edge has had because he decided to leave. Rightfully so. It was the right thing to do at that time.
He had a great run in TNA.
He did have a great run, yeah. I actually watched him in TNA. But these were the guys that said, hey, you know, like, we need to make new stars, and these guys have the chops on the mic, and they're entertaining. And you want to talk about the Attitude Era. I don't think you have the Raws that you do without those guys. I mean, because their segment was something to watch. You didn't fast forward it. And, yeah, it was so hot. Everybody was so hot at that time. Every character was hot. Stone Cold, The Rock, Bret Hart wasn't involved during that time.
Jericho. Benoit, Guerrero.
Yeah, DX also.
Hardy Boys.
And they were You know, you talk about that Oakland, you talk about that, I was there, because I remember we were high up in the nosebleeds, and it was SmackDown, we had to watch some house shows as well, too. And that's the one thing that you remember, I can't even remember the match that we saw, but I do remember that.
I
do remember that, yeah. But, and that just goes to show, you know, those promos that they cut, you know, the promos that they cut, even when they went against the Hardy Boys, right? And like Christian was like, he's like, man, he's like, he's all that Lita, man. Like, she's great to look at, huh? He's like, and Edge's like, yeah, she's great to look at from afar, you know. So it's just the, you know, they're in the film room, just like doing the whole like watching Jeff Hardy, I am the master Avenger, when they were like kids and stuff, right? And just ripping them. I mean, they were like a great heel promo cutting team.
Yeah.
And look what happened to him after that, because they gave him the chance.
You remember Christian like playing other dude's theme music on a kazoo?
Yeah.
Kurt Angle, he was
That stuff was good. Yeah, it's good to end off with that. Let's end off with that. We have Better Have My Donuts over here. I'm Bad News Ramen. We're at Moose Hill number 68. We'll see you after Raw, which I'm totally looking forward to. We'll see you after WrestleMania, of course. I probably think we'll talk more about Raw than we'll talk about WrestleMania. If we talk more about WrestleMania than Raw, then something happened really good at WrestleMania, and we talk about both of them together. So I'm really looking forward to that. We're going to finish off, because I know the producer will text me the next day and say, hey, what music were you playing? So that's Madlib and Freddie Gibbs. It was before they released Pinata.
Is he the lost Gibb brother?
No, he cusses way too damn much and talks about
selling
crack.
Hey, man, Barry Gibb can get pretty raw on his political talk show.
Andy Gibb could, too. And I'm still mad about the whole Conan O'Brien thing, dude. Let's end this off on a positive note. So this is Freddie Gibb over here, and Freddie Gibbs. Freddie Gibbs on the mothership, and we'll check you guys next week. Yeah.